The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another edition of the UAB Director's Chair. He is the director, the athletic director of the UAB Blazers. Mark Ingham joins us here on the left-hand side of the screen right here on, of course, our YouTube channel, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We're available everywhere. And we're not allowed to say anything yet, but I will say that the TKR is in partnership with UAB. And we got some very exciting things that are going to be happening here in the next several weeks. So, I mean, I'm just... I am chomping at the bit. You know, I'm not good at keeping secrets. So make sure you continue to watch and listen to TKR and go to UABSports.com for all the information about some really cool things. Some partnerships are going to be happening here in the next few weeks. How are you doing? We're recording this show here on a Thursday, the Thursday after the Rice debacle. Some nights, man, you know, Bartow is one of the hardest places in the country to win at. You can't, I mean, no. UAB does incredibly well either on off years. They have great records down at Bartow Arena, and the entire country knows that. When you get a team like a Rice that just comes out, just talk about that, and they're just on fire. What do you do?
Yeah, they were, man. And, you know, Andy Kennedy after the game, I mean, he basically, you know, just said, I don't know how to explain that, what just happened. We're usually a pretty physical team, and Rice didn't really let us be that, which, you know, credit to them. And but Rice shooting was on fire from start to finish. They were on fire. We were up 12-6 in the first half. Mm-hmm. So it's early in the game, you know, first, I don't know, 3-4 minutes of the game. We're up about 12-6, not about, we were up 12-6. And then we got outscored 43-12 for the remainder of the first half, which is crazy. I mean, like if we were doing an exhibition game with, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies, you know, you kind of like, well, you know, yeah. but that's not what it was. And they shot, I should have looked. I think Rice ended up shooting like 61% from the field and like 59% from three.
Yeah.
They got momentum and they couldn't stop. Now, what's funny is we out rebounded them. We didn't have a lot of turnovers, which is good. Neither team did really. Mm-hmm. And we actually beat them in the second half by 2 points, which is not a ton, but still we beat them in the second half. But the deficit was 25 points at the half. And I mean, we were all, you could feel the crowd, the team. It was like, you know, what Mike Tyson says, you got a plan to get punched in the mouth. And we got punched. It was like, we kind of felt dazed by it. And again, credit to Rice. I talked to their coach after the game. Just I passed him in the hallway and, hey, man, congratulations. You guys were great tonight. And he said, yeah, I told Andy, you know, before the game, he said, we just haven't been able to put a game together. And he said, we did tonight. He said, we've had moments like that all year where we'd have 15 to 20 minutes of really, really good basketball where we were shooting well. He said, tonight we finally were able to put a full game together and produced a win for them. So unfortunate for us, but we come back. And we play Wichita next Wednesday and at home. And we're on the road this weekend at Tulane. The men are. The ladies are at home against North Texas Saturday, 2 o'clock. North Texas, by the way, women's basketball, really, really good. They and us and Charlotte are kind of fighting for first place in the American. So we need fans on Saturday at 2 o'clock.
Yes.
From the women's team, who also lost last night at Tulsa, who's one of the other best team in the league. So it's really the four of us kind of fighting. But our men's team comes back next Wednesday and plays Wichita. And we got to have people here, man. Our crowd last night was lower than it has been in a minute. So probably the lowest in about 5 straight games. I'm not sure why. I don't know if there just happened to be some other stuff going on last night or, you know, what the reason might be. But the weather was good. And but it was just thinner. So, you know, we, you know, I hope people will recognize, you know, the opponent we're playing in Wichita and really come out. And our team is really good too.
Speaking for myself, I think it crept up on some people. You know, you had an 8 o'clock start against FAU. You had the Memphis game and you really got behind those and promoted those incredibly well. And I think a lot of people really got high on those two games, and obviously two games where UAB played really well. I do want to get back, and there's a reason why I'm asking this question, and it's very topical. When I saw North Texas, I hate that team. because it is the worst team to watch. I just do. I hate watching them play. I will go watch and I want to beat them so bad because I hate the way they play. And yeah. I couldn't get down there the North Texas game. And I had a friend of mine, Josh Claypo, who all of a sudden is wanting to go to all these UAB basketball games. He's a UAB clinical psychologist. I'm like, dude, you go to school there. You should go down there and check out your Blazers.
Yeah.
And he gets down there and he goes, can you tell me what to expect in this game? I said, I hope you brought your eyeliner with you because you're going to be taking a snooze. I said, it is really difficult to watch. And sure enough, you know, 10 minutes into the game, it was like 9-6 or something like that. And he's like, oh my gosh, this is so hard to watch. Can you just talk about, because everyone talks about the 40 minutes of hell, and I know that Andy really loves to press, and I know he loves the up and down game, and you know sometimes if you're 6-18, but you're putting up 90 points a night, you know, that can suffice for an avid fan base. But can you just talk about that a little bit? And then you mentioned the 43-12 run, a 31 point run. Psychologically speaking, you go into halftime. And I know in college football, when you get way up, you can change the way you perform offensively speaking. We see that. And then you get that tail of two halves where all of a sudden you start prevent. And next thing you know, the next team changes the motivation. Next thing you know, they're going off and scoring 21 straight. What's it like in basketball when you get up that much? How do you play that out as a coach and as an athletic director? You watch that. Do you stick to your game plan? Do you change your game plan? Do you adapt at halftime? What do you do?
No, I don't think that you have to change your game plan. I mean, I think that, you know, they, our coaches had studied, you know, Rice's strengths and using them as the example. It was about executing the plan. Yeah. You know, it's about doing what we do. And we got away from that in the first half and not executing the plan, not being physical, not trying to dominate inside the way we had in other games. North Texas is a funny team in that you're right. I think North Texas, a perfect game for them is they win and the final score is, you know, 45-40.
Yeah.
And it's boring to watch, but it's effective. They've really made that kind of their thing is they play incredibly good defense. And then, you know, they kind of burn the clock down and then you got to have good shooters. Which, you know, the player of the year that left them is now playing at Kansas State, and he's having a great year at Kansas State. Last year's player of the year, you know, they had a couple of guys who could make those shots because you burn, you kind of run this lengthy system, you wear the clock out and then take a shot and you make it. And then you go play tough defense, but it shortens the game because there's not as many possessions. But, you know, we like you mentioned, Andy likes to press. You can't press if you don't score. Mm-hmm. You set up the press after a score. You can't run those and change it back and forth, full court press, half court press, full court, no press. You can't keep them off balance if you're not scoring. You got to score to put that stuff in place. And, you know, that's just, you know, some nights you're hitting, sometimes you're not. The first half, again, last night, we weren't making shots. Well, again, this is really interesting. If you look at the team statistics for the game, the game stats weren't that bad.
Yeah.
The first half were, but the total game really weren't. We were much better in the second half. We were like, seems like we were 40% from three, which is good. Maybe better. We were much better from the field. I think over 50% from the field in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, again, the deficit was so great. We cut the lead down to like 15 at one point, maybe 16 from 25. It's just hard. You spend so much energy cutting it from 25 down to 15. You know, you got to keep hitting shots. And then just as soon as you miss a shot and then they go make a shot and you're back to 17 or they hit a three, you're back. It's like 18 or 20 or something. It's like, oh, you know, it's just hard.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Mark Ingram is the UAB athletic director. This is called the UAB director's chair. And of course you can watch this show every single week right here on our YouTube channel on TKR. And of course, listen to it live on the TKR app. We have well over 100,000 people who have downloaded our app and listened to great classic rock and roll. We'll have some classic rock questions coming up here in just a few minutes. Saw interesting news. EA Sports has come out with their College Football 25 game, and it's going to feature 134 FBS schools, so it looks like everyone's going to be involved in that. And I also saw where they're going to be offering $600 per player. I love watching you nod your head because I just know it gets on your nerves to no end. I just think it's so funny because in the day, could you imagine of being on your own video game? How cool would that be? And I can't imagine a person saying, you know, put me in all day long just to be in your own video game. To live in infamy would just be so cool. And the fact that they're offering these, and I also understand that the coaches are not going to be in this new game. I'm not sure if that's something that the coaches put together. Do you know, have any information on that at all?
I don't know about the coaches, but I mean, Tony, I can answer your question by saying I lived through it. My wife's got a younger brother who's 8 years younger than her. And I was on the first one. Okay. And back in the 90s, and he thought that was the coolest thing in the world. I didn't really care. I mean, I thought it was cool, but I didn't put much into it other than my wife's little brother thought I was cool because of it. You know, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm in with the family, you know, because little brother likes me, you know, because and you know, his buddies were like, oh, my gosh, that's crazy. And it's just when you move the cursor over the player, it showed my name.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so, yeah, that's cool. But you think anybody's buying that game because of that? They're not. You think anybody's buying that game because of any of the offensive linemen or the defensive linemen? I mean, your family, maybe your family, maybe. But like your dad ain't buying it because your dad doesn't play the game, you know? So you're talking about cousins and little brothers and whatever. And that's a stretch to say that it's to the you know. And do you think anybody's going to not buy the game because any of the linemen, they care about the quarterback, a receiver in these games? It's about a couple of people, like maybe the middle linebacker or safety, maybe a defensive end, maybe people that make impact plays. There's six people on the screen that are being maneuvered that by the player, by the joystick, you know, that anybody cares about, whatever. If EA is going to pay everybody $600, great, what, wonderful. But I think it's hilarious that anybody would suggest that was necessary, but great, good for them. I'm glad the game's coming back. I can tell you my son, Charlie, who loves the game, is thrilled the game is coming back because it's just fun.
That is.
He doesn't care anything about whether, you know, Bryce Young or Cam Newton or Mac Jones or whoever. He doesn't care about any of those guys. He just thinks he likes playing Oregon versus, you know, Florida, the 1995 team versus the 2010 team.
Exactly.
He thinks that's cool. He doesn't care about any of the individuals.
Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We do take email questions, and we're more than happy to read everything we get in. Jim in Mountain Brook wants me to ask Mark Ingram, what will change in college football between now that the end of this season is over and the 2024-2025 season? I think there's so much going on right now with NIL, the transfer portal, and people getting paid. Are there any things on the table from a legislative standpoint, from a governmental standpoint? You tell me, is there anything out there right now that is going to be changing between now and the coming of the new season? Then, of course, not only do we have realignment, we have a 12-team playoff, which obviously that changed too. And instead of taking the top, I guess they're taking the top five highest ranked conference winners. And then the next seven teams, I don't know why you just wouldn't take the top 12 teams that are ranked, because that's still being debated.
Yeah, the CFP thing is still being debated. I think they have at least agreed to the 5+7 model, which is good. That's the what is now the, you know, autonomy four conferences: ACC, Big 12, SEC, Big 10. They're champions and the highest ranked group of five champion. So the American Conference champion, for example. Last year it was Coastal Carolina, which I thought was absurd, but that's who got picked. But anyway, so that's the five. And then hopefully it'll be the next seven highest ranked schools. I think that's where the debate is, but there's at least a model where those five champions are automatics. The next seven, I'm not sure about. And then the financial distribution that comes from that, I'm sure still needs to be figured out. That's a 2-year agreement. So that's only for two seasons, the next two. And then there's another kind of discussion about the future from there.
What's the thing behind only doing it for 2 years, just to see how it goes?
They had started down this 12-team playoff before the Pac-12 dissolved.
Yeah.
So they kind of were down the road on this decision to do 12 teams, and they had a plan. So now they're sticking with the 12 teams for 2 years because they had gone so far as to decide that they were going to do the 12 teams. But you know, because the Pac-12 blew up, the model blew up. So they're kind of having to rethink that. And I think they're just going to see how the 2 years go and try to make an evaluation of stay with it. I don't think it necessarily means you have to change, mm-hmm. but I think it's a 2 year deal. And then a reevaluation of, is this working? Is this the right format or not? You know, I mean, and how the 12 become the 12 is probably more the issue, not about 12.
Well, I've never seen where they've had a certain number of playoff teams in any sport and then they pull it back. So we're never going to go back to 8 yeah. or 10 or whatever.
Probably
so,
not.
Yeah.
It's just how do you get to the 12?
Yeah. Do you think that the, and I know a lot of people made a lot of the committee, and do they actually watch the football games they're actually voting on? And I know that, you know, we've gone through the UPI and the AP and we went with the US coaches poll and we had SIDs voting. We had all these, then we had the computers doing it and stuff like that. Do you think that will change at all as far as, because right now, how long are you on the committee before you're out? Is it 3 or 4 years? And then you
a 3 year term. So I was asked to do a mock exercise for the CFP. Mm-hmm. I think that's all in preparation of potentially one day being on the committee. They like former football players, you know, that are ADs on the committee. So I barely qualify as that, but I am an AD and I did have a uniform at one point.
Yeah.
I was on a roster in the EA Sports game to prove it. So anyway, I went through the exercise and they talk a lot about, you know, the voting process in the room. We sat in the exact same room. Like we literally went to the same location in Dallas into the room with the exact same setup. I sat in Mitch Barnhart's chair. He's the AD at Kentucky. And it said, you know, this is your monitor. This is how the setup looks like. There's a big screen up here and this here, and here's how we vote. And so we're going to pretend, you know, we'll use last year's information. This is the information that you have and let's vote on it. And we had discussions about it, which is kind of funny because it had already played out.
Sure. Right?
You already knew who's on. But the guy, Bill Hancock, who's the executive director, now he's retiring, but Bill went through it and he said, you know, this is the conversation that we had. So he's like, let me provide you the information that we had at that time. And here's what you're trying to discuss and debate. And, you know, this guy got hurt and he's the quarterback. Does that matter to you or not? Well, you know, it does matter, but you know, boy, that team is great because of their defense, not really because of that quarterback. You know, that quarterback's statistics are not that good. Maybe it wouldn't impact them. Or if it had been, you know, a team with a Heisman Trophy quality type quarterback, you might say, oh man, they're very different without that team. We went through that whole thing. And what they do is they assign a group of teams to each member of the playoff committee. And they no joke, they set up a package at your house, wherever you're from, so that you are able to watch all these games. They send you the games and you watch all these games commercial free. Like they're able to set it up for you to where you watch the games in their entirety, but in an abbreviated fashion.
That's
so
cool.
You don't get all the.
Yeah.
The in the middle fluff, you know, the timeouts and the breaks and the reviews and whatever. And so it condenses the game for you so that you can watch all those games every single week. And then after, like, it's somewhere like it's the middle of the season, but I just can't remember if it's week 6 or exactly which week. But somewhere, let's just say in the middle of the season is when they go from meeting by Zoom the first half of the season to then they start physically going to Dallas every Sunday. And they're there Sunday to Tuesday discussing and debating this every single week. Here's what I saw. Boy, you know, whatever team, you know, Texas Tech, they run the ball in a way that I've never seen. You know, they got a running back and an offensive line. They just mow you down, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. They kind of talk about whatever they saw with the teams that they got to watch. And That's how they do it. It's really interesting. It's thorough as heck.
Yeah.
It's not just like all of us at home see the games that we see in our region. And
well, it's great. And it helps you understand why they do what they do, too.
Yeah. And they have a lot of opportunities during the year for us to discuss that and discuss the the manner in which teams get selected or not. Now, I don't mean, you know, there was a lot of controversy this year about Florida State and Georgia and seems like somebody else. But anyway, there's a lot of debate about who got in, who didn't get in and why. The same as like with the New Year's Six. And I mentioned Coastal Carolina. A lot of people thought SMU, who had more losses, had played a harder schedule and was probably a better team. But, you know, SMU lost their quarterback maybe like with two games left in the season. Yeah. And they still managed to win our conference championship with their second string quarterback. Florida State, as you know, had his season end sadly with I think it was a broken leg, and so these things happen. I mean, they do take into account those things, and we didn't get into the detail of why did they choose to not include Florida State, for example, but just like the process that they go through in advance of that, we're all very well aware of.
That's pretty cool. Mark Ingram is the UAB Athletic Director. This is called the UAB Director's Chair. We do it every single week here on the TKR app, Tony Currier Radio. And of course, yes, sir.
I'm going to give you one more thing, though.
Okay, yeah.
You were asking about, like, rules for the year.
Yeah.
Like, there's probably, you know, 500 things that are being proposed coming away from the CFP. Like, I went to a meeting one time. I was on the football competition committee, and one day they present this rule change about socks. And there was probably three people that think that we ought to have a rule where everybody wears the same sock, kind of like the NFL.
Yeah.
Everybody wears the same socks. They're pulled up. They're never not pulled up. You have to pull up your socks. And if you don't pull up your socks, there's some, and it was just absurd. And the fact that we were discussing that, I just remember everybody in the room was like, are we really talking about socks? Like, we got so many other things we got to deal with. We're talking about socks. And it ended up being shot down. Like, we ain't worried about socks. But the couple of people that had pushed it forward, it was kind of hilarious. They sort of present it like, okay, this next item here, it's really got a lot of support upstream. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer, you know, the sock thing. They just, you know, the socks.
It's just
a bad look for our game. You know, some guys got their socks all the way down, no socks, halfway up, wristband around their calf. We need to get away from that, guys. It just looks bad. And this, like I said, it's kind of a no-brainer for everybody. Can we just go ahead and just vote on this? And everybody kind of went, who cares about this? I haven't heard anybody say they care about this.
Yeah.
Person presenting it is who cared about it. You know,
bigger fish to fry around here. Hey, let me ask you this, since you brought this up, a rules change. Why is the rule in college football that once you hit the ground, you're down and you can't get up and run again? Can you please explain to me why we haven't changed that to the NFL rule? I don't get that. It happens at least two or three times a game. It just seems so it's such an anomaly. It's such a weird rule. Can you explain why that is?
Well, or the opposite. Why doesn't the NFL adopt ours? I guess the NFL is not going to adopt any of our rules.
Well, but you're not down. I mean, you're not down. I mean, until you get touched, right? You're not.
Tony, I agree with you that is a funny one that ought to be the same at both levels. Quite frankly, I don't care which. I mean, I could live with down the way we do it in college, or I could live with the NFL rule either way. But it is kind of funny that the two leagues do it differently. The NFL, I think, has slowly moved closer to a college football overtime rule. Mm-hmm. You know, the old NFL overtime rule I thought was horrible.
Yeah, no doubt.
And they've moved to, they don't do what we do, but it's sort of halfway there, which I think has been better for the NFL.
Agreed.
I don't know the why. You're asking me why, and I don't know. But no. It's kind of funny, though.
Yeah, I was curious. All right, you want to do some classic rock? So I was doing something on Fox 6 this morning, and we do Music Mondays on Mondays up there, and they love me coming up and talk about classic rock, and you can make an argument that classic rock right now, AC/DC just announced their 50th anniversary. They're going to be going, I think they're opening up in May in Germany. They're going to finish up in Ireland in September. Then they're going to be coming on North American tour. They'll be coming here, and you got the Rolling Stones playing Jazz Fest. I mean, it's just crazy how big classic rock is right now.
Funny. Jazz Fest?
The Rolling Stones are playing Jazz Fest. I mean, how crazy is that? Think about that. They're playing Jazz Fest. I mean, it's just super cool. The Rolling Stones are playing Jazz Fest. I mean, it's amazing.
And they're playing.
So he came up with this idea and it was interesting. And I hate looking off while I'm doing this because I am paying attention. But he's like, you should do something called Rock Headlines, where you just read some rock headlines and just comment on them. Okay. And I was like, okay. So I put classic rock and I clicked on news just to see. Right. So I want you to see, and you tell me if you've heard of these stories or what you think. Peter Frampton was tricked into being in the Sgt. Pepper's film. That's a headline. I don't know. I don't know what's all about it. Classic rock legend reveals battle with Parkinson's is keeping him from his farewell tour. Do you know who that is? Mick Jones from Foreigner. Did you know?
Oh, I did not know that. The first person I thought about was Mick Mars, but he doesn't have Parkinson's. He's got something, I can't remember what it's called, really unusual with his back.
Yeah, Mick Jones evidently wants to be on this farewell tour, but because he's got Parkinson's, he can't play. Paul Stanley has revealed that releasing new Kiss albums really got frustrating towards the end.
You know, I've read some stuff about Kiss lately. Like I read that Gene Simmons hates the song I Was Made for Loving You, Baby. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said when Paul first started introducing the lyrics, he loved it. He said, I just heard the lyrics. And he says something like, okay, well, what's my part? And he goes, then you go. Doo, 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 doo.
Yeah.
And he's like, really? He's like, now look, we play that song in the crowd and everybody's like bouncing around and they like the song or whatever. He goes, it's a disco song. He goes, I hate it.
and it was considered a disco song. I mean, you could still hear that song in discotheques.
Yes. And you know, that was when they took the makeup off.
Mm-hmm.
They did that when they took the makeup off, which I did not like it. I don't care for that song either, but
yeah. Anyway. John Anderson of Yes said he's super glad he saw Spinal Tap before Yes's 90125 tour. He said,
My college roommate didn't know that Spinal Tap was like a joke, sort of like Tenacious D.
Yeah.
He didn't know it. And I think
a lot of people didn't know it.
I didn't know the guy's name. And I was like, look, man, it's Lenny and Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah.
Like, you not see this guy? He's the same guy. And we didn't have the internet, so I couldn't like compare. I was like, look at his face. You know the Jew? And I was like, he goes, and I'm like, you know, it's kind of hilarious.
There's a big trial going on right now that just started actually yesterday. Evidently a trial of three men accused of attempting to sell nearly 100 pages of stolen Eagles lyrics, including Hotel California, the original. That trial started yesterday. Eagles manager testifies Don Henley felt like he was being extorted. Evidently, somehow, you know, you're writing all this stuff and there's so much great stuff to be collected. And evidently these collectors somehow got in touch with this stuff. And Don Henley probably couldn't even told you where the original writings of Hotel California were. He finds out that they're going for sale on some auction block and now is saying they were stolen. He wants his stuff back. Does he deserve it?
If he can prove they were stolen, I mean, what he's got to prove is that he didn't sell them,
yeah,
or give them away, you know, or just leave them laying in a hotel room somewhere and somebody pick it up and go, wow, this is cool. And, you know, then years later go, wait a minute, I kept this thing. Where was that? I threw it. I put it in this box.
Yeah.
That's the lyrics to Hotel California. I mean, what does the court say about finders keepers?
That's a great question. I mean, it's a great question. I mean, because, I mean, unless you have receipts where you actually bought these things, because a lot of this stuff, you know, ends up in private collections. And then, yeah. And then next thing you know, I'm doing like a fundraiser at Our Lady of the Valley Church ball, you know, and next thing you know, I see some handwritten lyrics from John Lennon show up. And I'm like, so-and-so goes to church here. He had this in his locker and he decided to turn them in. You're like, what? Are you serious? Yeah. I mean, I've seen that actually happen before. So it's kind of strange. What else? I'm looking for something else here. Here's one. Why Bruce Dickinson likes wandering around graveyards. Iron Maiden? You're into Iron Maiden, right?
I mean, I love Iron Maiden. And, you know, it's kind of like Strawberry Fields from the Beatles, you know?
Yeah.
Eleanor Rigby. There's I mean, artists are different thinkers and get inspired in a lot of different ways. And, you know, to those of us that don't have that kind of talent, that probably just sounds creepy and weird. But I mean, I guess I could kind of see that, because you're trying to come up with things that the common person doesn't think about. Yeah. So go to an uncommon place to be and see what strikes you.
So early last week, I'm laying in my chair. It's about 9:30 and my phone just starts to blow up. I mean, it's just like, and I've got it on Do Not Disturb, but I can see it flashing and I'm trying to nod off a little bit. I'm like, oh, what is going on? I had my kids, so it was not with my kids. I was like, so I look over and I've got like six or seven of my friends going, where are you? And I said, why? And they're like, Journey just took the stage, man. Aren't you at the Journey concert? And I had forgotten that Toto had opened up for Journey last week at the BJCC. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, they're sending me clips of Don't Stop Believing, this, that, and the other. Did you, I'm assuming you did not go to the show. Do you know anyone?
I didn't go. I think we had a game. I think we might've had a game, or we had something going on here. And it was funny. It's funny that you asked this, because my wife and one of my kids and a neighbor all asked me that same question. Hey, man, did you go to the Journey show? And I was like, yeah. I can't remember. I had something else going on and I couldn't go. But just kind of hilarious that you're asking, because I don't know how many people have asked me about rock concerts that I did not attend as much as I have over the last week about this show that I didn't attend.
You tell me how this sounds here. Is it,
I got nothing.
Can't hear it?
No.
All right, you'll hear it on the podcast because it's coming across my headphones. No, and there's the dude singing.
For Journey.
Yeah.
I don't know his name, but everybody says he sounds incredible.
He does.
They found him like on YouTube or something. He was
He was a YouTube guy. And I just Neil Sean and Jonathan Cain evidently are the last two remaining members of the band, and they hate each other. And somehow they finally decided to bury the hatchet because they're on the road. And they're both making a crap ton of money, right? And so they're like, hey, well, let's get past this and at least play nice on this tour that we're doing. And I can't help but think to myself, because I don't know how many original members there are in Toto. I'd probably go see it. I can't believe I'd say this. I'd probably go see Toto before I'd go see Foreigner or go see Journey. But this had a Las Vegas feel to it. And it just made me feel bad. People kept sending me clips of Journey songs, like Separate Ways. And it just really felt like if I went, I was going to probably rub up against a 57-year-old soccer mom that it just didn't have a cool factor to it. Am I wrong here?
Yeah. I didn't see it, but I know that I've got that image. I don't like that scene either. Like the folks who go and play like out in Las Vegas, and they have whatever that term is, where they a residency.
Yeah, residency. Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's different.
Let me ask you this, and I'll let you go. Do you like residencies? I mean, I like the fact that the band plays one place, and they're like, come to me.
Because that makes it special to me.
Yeah, because you know,
traveling around makes it special to me.
I'm with you. I think because the whole idea of going through the tour list and seeing if your city is on there or how close they're going to come is like finding something in a box of cereal. I mean, it's super exciting. And if you know they're out in Vegas for the next 3 years and you can just go see them whenever you want, it just doesn't feel as special. And I'd be honest with you. Go ahead.
And it's kind of what people do at the end of their career.
It is. And I've got friends of mine who have played out in Las Vegas. Taylor Hicks is one of them. He had a residency out there at Bally's. And he's like, dude, never again. Never again. I mean, it's great because I don't have to unpack my stuff. And I can just live out of a hotel room he did it for a year and a half. And he said it was incredibly difficult to live in Las Vegas for a year and a half.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I can see the value in not having on the artist and the band not having to travel around and live out of a suitcase. I totally get it from their side while they'd want to, but like as a fan,
I think Sammy Hagar's got a residency out there right now. I think,
is that right?
Yeah. I think he's playing.
Man, I would do that.
Yeah. I think he's playing.
I've seen him before. Have you seen him?
Fantastic.
He's great.
Yeah, I saw him when I was in high school, and was sober, was not drinking, and I threw up. I rocked so hard. I shook my head so much, I think I gave myself a concussion. I'm not kidding you. I was like 16. I was puking my brains out. I remember my dad going, "Did you drink tonight?" And I was like, "No." And he smelled my breath. He's like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "I got a concussion, dude. It was killer. It was great."
Yeah, the Red Rocker, man. The thing about him, you know, as it relates to Van Halen, you know, we've talked about this. I love David Lee Roth as a showman, but he's not really talented otherwise. And he's not a great singer. He doesn't play any instruments. But you know, Sammy Hagar is a great singer, a great vocalist, and equally good. Like, he could be his own lead guitarist, you know, like he could be lead guitarist for somebody else who sang, you know, he's that good.
You think when David Lee Roth is saying his prayers at night, he's like, "Lord Jesus, I didn't ask the question yet.
Yeah.
No, because at one point in your life, because he's already talked about dying. You know, when Eddie Van Halen died, he's like, "I'm probably next." He thought he was going to be the first one to die in the band. And he's only like 70, 72 years old. But at some point in your life, you start to realize what God's purpose for you in your life is. I would hope that you would start looking at yourself and you start thinking about your legacy. And was I a great father? Was I a great mother? Did I work in this particular business? Did I change the people's lives around me? Is the earth a better place since I was here? And I'm trying to think what David Lee Roth actually thinks about when he thanks the Lord for everything he's got, because his life has just been, it's been miraculous. It's been amazing, because you just brought it up. He didn't play an instrument. He wasn't that good of a singer.
Right.
He was a great showman. I mean, I guess that would be his talent. But
there's talent to that. It's hard, get up and do, you know, his showmanship is what brought attention to that band. Really.
You're right.
Sort of wild antics, kind of like Mick Jagger, you know, his antics on stage and jumping around and doing the high kicks and all that stuff, which is really funny to say that now, but at the time it was not what people did. And he was a good looking guy with the big hair and the whatever, and kind of looked like a male model, you know, real fit guy and all that. But the talent was the other three. I mean, the other three, that was where the real musical talent lied. And I've never met David Lee Roth, but everything that I've ever read or seen in an interview is what David Lee Roth thinks about is David Lee Roth. Yeah. And I mean, he's a egotistical, high ego guy. Did you hear that he's, I don't know how long ago this was, he became an EMT in New York?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, he's riding around in ambulances helping as an EMT.
Really? Well, in New York. He had a residency set up out there, and evidently it did not sell out. And he just basically said, "Listen, I'm not, which is kind of hard to believe that because
he's hard to believe, but man, it's the package that they're not getting. And you know, he's got this whole thing, like Alex Van Halen, who I think is an amazing drummer. You know, Alex has this whole beef with Sammy, where like if we went and saw Sammy tonight, he can play anything he wants. Mm-hmm. But if I wanted to run a commercial with an old Van Halen hit, like Alex won't let us.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can go, "Hey man, we're going to pay for you." So no, I don't like, or like Sammy said something I saw in a documentary where he was saying that he wanted to, there was a documentary about Sammy Hagar or rock music or classic rock. And there was a section in there about him they just wanted to include it. And Alex didn't like the way it was depicted or something. And it's like,
You know, what's really strange is, and now we're talking about this, I can't remember what life was like when Eddie was alive. Does that make sense? The idea that he would still be alive, and he obviously went a lot sooner than we thought he was going to, but I can't imagine. I mean, the idea of Van Halen even being back on the road again. And I know that Sammy's trying to put together some type of special band or something like that. Let me ask you real quick. What when David Lee Roth dies, I'm doing a show here on Tony Curry Radio called Wide Awake Wake. And I've always said, you know, why should we wait for people to die to celebrate their lives? And, and you know, it's like Suzanne Somers or Don Henley or anyone else, you know, when they pass away, we remember all their wonderful music and everything they contributed to rock and roll as we know it. And I'm like, why are we waiting for these people to die before we do these things?
I don't know, man. I mean, like the Kennedy Honors does that. There's some people that do that stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, when David Lee Roth passes,
I'm in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Will David Lee Roth be front page news for how long when he passes away? What kind of, we kind of know pretty much when Paul McCartney passes away, it's going to be news for a week.
That's because the Queen of England will do a parade or something, you know, he's Sir Paul McCartney.
Well, and if you die at an impromptu time, like a Michael Jackson or Whitney Houston, certainly you're going to get your props too, because you're dying way too early. But David Lee Roth dies, say, at the age of 75. What are we going to do with him?
It'll be front page news and for a day. And that's what it'll be.
And that'll be it.
But he was a huge figure. I mean, in music, I mean, there's plenty of people that aren't great people, and I don't know that he's not a great person, but he probably does a lot of really good things. But he's been out of it. You know, he did some solo stuff that was really good in the 90s when he left Van Halen. I liked his solo stuff.
I did too.
Crazy from the Heat.
Skyscraper.
Those were great. Those were great. I loved them. So he was significant. I loved him as a singer. I mean, I loved his showmanship. I loved him. I don't think you want to know him personally, but I think I liked him as a lead singer.
I was on his bus outside the Five Points Music Hall. He went down there and did a solo show, and the women almost flipped the bus over. I'll never forget it. I thought the bus was going to go. I was like, he was still wearing the suspenders. This was like in the mid 90s. And they were going to flip the bus over, man. I was like, dude, they're going to flip the bus. He's like, I know, isn't it great? I'm like, no, it's just no.
Isn't it great?
But he was still hairy and had the suspenders on. And was, All right, my friend, UABSports.com. Check it out. We'll talk some more classic rock next week. We'll get after it. Keep hitting the winning page, man. And we'll catch up next week.
Sounds good. See you, pal.
Thank you, brother.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.